powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Fun show today. Hour number three on a Friday. All right, we're going to get to the bottom of it right now. We're bringing on the phone David Ovalle of the Miami Herald. He's got the Quentin Dunbar story down there, and we have questions. We tried to play detective about a half an hour ago, and it didn't really go so well, David. So we're bringing you on right now. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I guess we'll focus on Dunbar here, and if you look at just the timeline on this story, initially there were witnesses that had accusations that said he was there with Baker. They were fingering him. Then all of a sudden they redacted their statements. They said, nope, he wasn't there. And then Dunbar's attorney, Michael Grieco, gets in trouble. He's accused of paying off the witnesses. And now, today, the prosecutors say insufficient evidence. Dunbar is not going to be charged. So why was the prosecution unable to come up with any evidence against him? Were those witnesses the only thing they were relying on?
So the case against Dunbar, just based on the initial police documents, was always a little bit shakier than it is against DeAndre Baker. There was conflicting statements about whether he had a gun or not. Dunbar was not at the party the night before. That was sort of the supposed gambling party where like $70,000 were taken. There was dispute over whether that was like legit gambling losses. And so that was sort of like the whole supposed motivation for Baker getting, orchestrating the whole thing. So, and he wasn't there the night before. So his argument was, well, you know, the motive, you know, he doesn't have a motive. Why would he go along? He's not even really, you know, that good friends with DeAndre to begin with. So the case against him was always a little shakier. Of course, what makes it much more interesting is that those guys recant after, you know, getting paid money, not by the lawyer, but in the lawyer's office by a middleman who's like buddies with the two of those guys. The whole thing was a little shakier. They did not explain why they didn't file charges on Dunbar. But it's probably safe to assume that between that and the credibility of the victims, they didn't think they could prove the case.
Why the need to pay off the witnesses?
Well, that is interesting, and it's still sort of an unresolved. Of course, the need to pay them off is, you know, you want your freedom, right? But as for whether anyone's going to be held accountable, that's still unclear, because what happened is the actual payoffs, if they're legally considered payoffs or whatever, happened in Miami-Dade County, which is a separate county from where the robbery happened, right? So, we've been writing about this whole ordeal, and we asked Broward County, say, hey, you know, well, what are you guys doing about the witness tampering? And so they say, well, it happened in Miami-Dade, so they wouldn't be our jurisdiction. And you ask Miami-Dade, and they kind of like, you know, don't really give you an answer. So it's a little bit like, you know, the Spider-Man memes, you know, where people are like, they're just pointing at each other. So I know that case is still technically open. I guess the police detectives probably have to figure out if they want to charge someone, or, you know, which jurisdiction would handle it.
Now, David, when we talk about Dunbar, we talk about DeAndre Baker. Now, I think one thing is always kind of convoluted, because obviously they're facing their own different legal battles and trying to look out for themselves. Were DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar friends? Was that relationship there?
I think if I remember, they played either at the same high school or one of the, you know, high schools that were similar or close to each other. But they definitely knew each other through South Florida, football, high school football circles, right? So they're both from down here. And, you know, a lot of these guys, they know each other. They know everyone that's kind of from here. So that's how they know each other. But according to Dunbar's people, they didn't, you know, they weren't really like really close buddies. I mean, I think Dunbar's a little bit older than Baker.
So it's interesting because the next question that we are having as Seahawks fans is, and reporters is, okay, with Quentin Dunbar now not having a case against him now, the NFL sometimes can take things into their own hands from a personal conduct policy. Is there anything in this case, obviously the potential bribery here, but is there anything left in this case of Quentin Dunbar that the NFL could look at and say, maybe the NFL wasn't able to stick, or the legal system wasn't able to have something stick on Dunbar, but there's still a lot of evidence that's out there that just wasn't able to formulate and come together against him.
You know, that's always one of the rubs with the NFL, right? I mean, there's always their sort of arbitrary system of punishment doesn't always align with what happens in the criminal justice system, right? Like you saw with Ray Rice, you know, what was it? He got 2 games, and then when the video comes out, suddenly he gets 6 games, and now, you know, and they were never able to actually charge him with anything criminally. So I honestly have no idea. I mean, if it's one of those things where it's like a big headache for the league, they'll tend to find a way to pigeonhole whatever looks bad into some sort of punishment. But in this case, it would be hard for me to think that Dunbar is going to get suspended for any length of time, only because one, he's not like some major star, you know what I mean? I mean, I know he's important to the Seahawks plans, but he's not like, you know, it's not like a Ray Rice caliber type of person. And also it's not so clear cut they did anything wrong other than just be at a party where a robbery took place.
So is that investigation against Michael Grieco still ongoing? And if it is, say that he's found guilty of helping to pay off witnesses or whatever, does that then affect Dunbar in any way, or is he now just kind of in the clear no matter what happens with Grieco's case?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess I don't think it would matter for, might not matter for the NFL's case, but, yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Grieco's going to end up getting dinged with anything.
Yeah.
Because he's going to say, well, I wasn't inside the, you know, I don't know what they were doing in there. I just facilitated a meeting for them to sign all the witness statements in my office. You know, I had no idea they were going in there with bags. So he's got like enough plausible deniability. He's got a private investigator and a notary that were, you know, are going to say the same thing. While the investigation is still ongoing, I doubt he's going to get dinged with much anything, possibly a Florida bar, you know, violation, but nothing criminal, nothing like that. That's just my best guess. But the other guy, that's going to be the interesting case. This guy, Dominique Johnson, they call him Coach. He's sort of like buddies with DeAndre and with Quentin. So I know the investigation is still going into him. So a lot of that would kind of depend, you know, Dunbar in theory, could still face some sort of witness tampering if that guy ends up getting arrested, and then, you know, there's some concrete plan that gets unveiled that, yes, you know, this was what the whole plan was to begin with, to pay off these guys. But I mean, it's going to be tough, man. Credibility of your witnesses and your victims is always a very important thing in the criminal justice system. And a lot of those guys that had gotten, robbed, you know, they're going to get beaten up on the stand when they testify.
It doesn't really sound like, I mean, sometimes when you know, there's a high profile legal case, like the Duke lacrosse case, for example, the prosecutor in that town wanted to make that a big spectacle and he wanted to make that a big deal for himself. It doesn't really sound like the prosecutors here are targeting Dunbar specifically. Right. It doesn't sound like that's a priority for them.
Yeah. And frankly, I don't even think they care all that much about DeAndre Baker in terms of, you know, high profile defendants. I mean, remember, this is Broward County. This is where Parkland is, the school shooting at Parkland is and will be the biggest case awaiting trial for many years. And, you know, there's all kinds of crazy other things that happen, not just in Broward, but in Miami-Dade. And these guys aren't exactly, I mean, ain't exactly like, you know, OJ, the OJ trial or anything. So I don't suspect that they're going after these guys with any particular zeal other than what they think they can prove under the law.
David Avaye from the Miami Herald. We appreciate you coming on, David. Good stuff.
Anytime. Thank you.
Seahawks training camp is here, and it's time for two-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Starting August 17th, join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon featuring John Clayton and our Seahawks experts, and then your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon at 710sports.com. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all access pass to Seahawks training camp with two-a-days starting August 17th. Jake, that was a good question, because really we're on to the NFL side of this now with Quentin Dunbar, and what will they look at as far as, you know, trying to assess whether or not to suspend them, and if so, how many games? Like, what are they looking at? Like, what do they know about what Quentin Dunbar has or has not done? Like, David just told us there, he was not at that card game or whatever that precipitated this whole thing the night before. So that's, you can clear him of that. If he was just present at a party where DeAndre Baker walked in there with a gun or whatever, is just being at a party reason enough to suspend somebody? I don't think that it is. What do you think?
Well,
Stacey?
It's
or Jake.
Well,
sorry.
All good. I don't think it is. But that's why I think that there has to be more that they're looking at. And again, did Dunbar directly pay these guys off, or did Michael Grieco? Right, because Grieco is the one that's being connected with that. Other than just being Dunbar's attorney, it's not directly linked to Dunbar. So I'm just wondering if there is something that the NFL can look at and connect Quentin Dunbar to, you know, the personal conduct policy. Because if you're going to start suspending players for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, which is essentially the evidence that they have right now with Quentin Dunbar, outside of, you know, unreliable eyewitness testimony, I don't really know if there's anything that the NFL could do to suspend him for, other than just like what David said earlier, that sometimes the NFL takes things into their own hands just because it doesn't look good from a media standpoint, from a public standpoint, and they need to try and make an example out of somebody. That's the only thing that I could really see the NFL, you know, trying to do here. But I don't know if there's really anything seriously connecting him, like a smoking gun that the prosecution couldn't connect him to, that the NFL can sit there and say, well, we can.
Yeah, I think it's helped him that it feels like since the beginning he has been either intentionally or unintentionally kind of separated from Baker, who is by far, whether in the initial police report or in the reports to come from Pat Leonard, who initially broke that report that the witnesses were being paid off, allegedly. So in any one of those things that have come out, it's always seemed like Dunbar has been separate from Baker in his involvement, in his, level of even kind of like talking to witnesses and stuff. So I think that's the best thing to happen for his case. And I think that the NFL technically, under the personal conduct rule, could just say, hey, you're subject to a suspension because you somehow didn't meet our bar of excellence or behavior or whatever that we expect all members of this league, owners, players, front office execs, whatever, to follow when they conduct themselves on and off the field. The problem is that it's easy to do that when it's something very obvious, you know, like, hey, you were accused of domestic violence and there was a police report and this happened. this is something that's really tricky and could almost be subjective, right? Because it goes into that thing you said, Jake. Can the NFL say, hey, you're in trouble because you went to a party with your friend who did something wrong? Or do they have enough evidence, which doesn't sound like Miami did, to say, hey, you did more than that? So I don't know. It's a sticky situation, no doubt. I wouldn't be shocked if there was still some kind of suspension, but I would be shocked if said suspension was more than even like 2 or 4 games.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be that low if indeed there is one. I just want to throw one more hypothetical at you. We'll get to some NFL headlines here. What if it was Patrick Mahomes?
It's so...
What if it was Patrick...
I don't think people would believe it.
What if it was Patrick Mahomes that went in there with Baker and it was exactly the same? Like, he didn't really do anything. He was just there. Do you think the league would be more inclined or less inclined?
Less.
To levy a suspension?
Less inclined. I think that the league recognizes Patrick Mahomes as a huge driving factor in their popularity and sales. I think the same would be said for Russell Wilson, for Tom Brady, for anyone where it's like, this is one of the faces of your league. And it gets to the point where, like, you talk about like a power in the NBA, that a player like LeBron, I'm not comparing the two, but in the NBA, there are some players that can kind of dictate the terms of their own career. I feel like that's Patrick Mahomes right now. Like, he has enough sway that he'd be able to influence decisions about his punishment more than almost any other player.
Well, and that's true. But the other thing that you have to also consider in this is the cachet that they have built in terms of who the person they are, right? If you saw Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson in this situation, the immediate thought would be, no, they weren't a part of this. They didn't do that. They probably were just there. They were just, you know, bystanders. So you would easily believe that narrative a lot quicker than you would with other players. That either A, you don't really know anything about, or B, have a history of being around, you know, that kind of crowd. And so I think that that's, you know, probably what would, why the NFL would give more leeway than anything else.
There is some precedent for this, and it's slightly different, but remember when Plexico Burris shot himself in the leg in that?
I remember? Yes.
Antonio Pierce was standing right next to him when it happened, his linebacker teammate. And Ahmad Bradshaw also was at the club. Neither of those guys got any kind of suspension because of that.
That's different.
Just
still
by
to
virtue
me.
Of the fact that they were with him, you know, they walked into the venue together,
yeah,
or whatever.
Well, Dunbar was still accused. But, it is a different. Dunbar was still accused, yes, of taking part in a robbery. He just didn't allegedly have a weapon, but. I mean, right. Either way, it sounds like whatever witnesses placed you there and said you did this also kind of discredited themselves. So,
yes.
Weird.
Did they ever?
Did they ever?
All right. Well, meanwhile, we haven't talked too much about the guy who's going to, well, who could get 10 years to life. DeAndre Baker, playing for my Giants, probably no more. He gets charged with 4 counts of robbery. So, again, as I say, if convicted, he could get 10 years to life. If he pleads guilty, if it goes that far, I doubt he'll get life in prison for this, since nobody was actually shot. But you guys think his NFL career is probably over?
Yes. With something like this, unless somehow he is able to get acquitted of this and try and get another chance, I think absolutely this is a tough one to walk away from. Because also, here's the thing. He gets convicted for this, you know, let's say he somehow is able to get a lesser sentence. He's still serving time, and he's serving time in his early stages when he was not a solidified player in this league. A great talent, but not a solidified player. So I think that with DeAndre Baker, yeah, he definitely, this is probably the end of his football career.
Yeah, I'd say so too. It seems like throughout this entire process, like I said, he's always seemed like the one that has been carrying the bigger weight of these charges, whether it was that each of the witnesses in the initial police report said that he had a gun. Whether it's that he was the one named as being with Michael Grieco and allegedly making some of those payments. I mean, he has always been kind of like the most forward-facing person involved in this. And it's just, it's all a bad look. And I mean, Pat Leonard in his interview with John Clayton seemed to indicate as much, that he would be shocked to ever see Baker in a Giants uniform again.
God, as lucky as the Seahawks are for having, of the two guys here, they've got the right guy in Dunbar, right? The guy who didn't have a gun. The Giants are so, they're equally unlucky. Like, they're trying to rebuild their team. They drafted this guy high. He was a first-round pick, was he not? If he wasn't first-round, I think he was a high second-round. DeAndre Baker.
Yes,
okay.
He was.
So they draft him, and now they're going nowhere with that pick. I mean, he'll probably never play for them again. I mean, they've had so much. Remember David Wilson, the running back, the little running back they drafted in, like, 2012? He ended up getting that neck problem. Remember when he made touchdowns? He would, like, do the full frontal flip. He would, like, do the somersault. Like, he's gone. Every high pick that they get, they end up wasting. Odell Beckham is not even on their team anymore.
I'm sensing a lot of personal hurt coming from you. This is coming from a place of anger and sadness.
You know, every time I try to care about the Giants,
20 minutes
I just
later.
Get disappointed.
What I'm saying is that they had a chance on this guy, and instead they traded back. Tom, it's 3:30. Our show ended 30 minutes ago. You actually just interrupted Bob and Dave. We're done talking about the Giants. And one more thing.
All right, let's get out of that bad zone. Let's push out the jive.
It's a dark place for you.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
Curtis, do you want to tell me what's on tap off the top of your head?
Of course, you got the Mariners, 6:40 tonight,
yeah.
First pitch against those Colorado Rockies.
Those Rockies.
Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. He went 6 shutout innings his last time out. He's taking on Antonio Senzatella tonight. That's right, Senzatella.
Whoa, never heard of him.
Yeah, those Rockies, they're in first place in the NL West, so watch out for them.
Wow. What?
That is what's on tap.
More like Antonio sends him.
Curtis Rogers
sends him out
to what's on tap.
Sends him packing.
Yeah.
Curtis, I would have gotten there if you would have let me.
All right. You're right. My bad.
I love a. Gosh.
Everything is a competition.
Everything has to be a competition with Stacey. if you get to the punch first. She's going to let you know that she was almost there.
Just
almost
so
there.
All of our listeners know, every single time we do an interview and someone tells one of us, either me or Jake, that's a good question, we talk trash to each other on our team's chat for like 4 minutes. So every time you hear that, what's happening?
This is true.
If it's me, is me like applauding myself and doing this kind of like, are you not entertained? It's... always compete. You know what I mean? It's that kind of mentality here in Seattle.
That's right.
With the Seahawks and with 710 ESPN Seattle. Always compete.
That's what makes the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show so different from others. We compete with each other
always
during the show at all times.
Some of us compete harder than others.
I told you. Call me Hercules.
Stop. Tom, no one's calling you Hercules. Go to break, Tom.
All right. Hercules, Jake, and Stacey.
No.
We continue next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
National Football League headlines other than Quentin Dunbar today. We've got a guy in the NFL who thinks that getting sacks is really easy. That would be Chandler Jones. The quote, by the way, the record for sacks in a season is 22.5, set by my boy, Michael Strahan, back in 2001. And evidently, Jones came close last year. He got 19. But his quote was, I don't think it's that hard to get. And I feel like if there was a year to do it, this could be the year, honestly, for me. That's a personal goal of mine. But we have more help on our team. We have a better team. So, yeah, I don't disagree with that, that the Cardinals are probably better here. But, guys, 22 and a half sacks? You think that's easy? I don't. You got to be sacking guys left and right for the entire season to do that. That's cool that he set it as a goal, but come on, Jake.
Yeah, it is difficult. It is extremely difficult. But if you're Chandler Jones and you're looking at the way that this guy has been playing, I mean, he has been an absolute force in this league, and especially for the Arizona Cardinals in this division. And I hate to say it, Chandler Jones has been the beneficiary of playing against the Seahawks offensive line.
Ooh.
I mean,
oh yes.
Think about all the damage that he has done, particularly to this group, to the Seahawks, every year that they play. You know, he had 19 sacks last year. I mean, think about when he showed up to CenturyLink Field and he lined up against Jamarco Jones for the first time. What do you think he was
He was
thinking?
Like, yes! I feel bad. I thought Jones, in theory, played well, considering he was thrown in last
Gosh,
minute. And
so
didn't they move him to a position he hadn't played before? But I remember that game to this day because I was watching from the press box. And there was a point when they were playing music in CenturyLink and the Cardinals players were dancing. And I was like, this isn't what you want. This is a no. But no, I totally agree. I mean, here's the thing. No one has broken that record. It's not easy to do. But when you look at Chandler Jones' actual stats, like 19 sacks last year, think about that. Rasheem Green led the Seahawks with 4 sacks. And I know the Seahawks are not the example of stat leaders. But even when we thought Frank Clark was like on fire and just sacking people left and right, that was like 14. He had 19. That's insane. So, like, if there was someone to do it, I would put my money on Chandler Jones of all people, including maybe some other guys where I was like, yeah, I could see him doing that. But it's certainly not easy to do.
Now, he's 30 years old. He's got 96 career sacks, which ties him for 41st with J.J. Watt. Forget about Jones for a second. If you're 41st all-time in sacks, like, would you put J.J. Watt in the Hall of Fame right now? I feel like he is a Hall of Famer. I feel like, I feel like he is, but 41st time in sacks, doesn't he have to do better than that?
Yeah, but also J.J. Watt is one of those guys that the reason why I believe people are so ready to put him on the Hall of Fame because he has had such an injury history that it's what if? What if he could have stayed healthy all this time? And the times that he is healthy, he is easily one of the game's best. He's one of the game's best game breakers, game wreckers, in passing and in the run game. He is a complete player. So I believe that's why J.J. Watt is considered so highly, like he has Chandler Jones type of sack numbers, right? Chandler Jones has quietly been one of the league's best players and one of the league's best defensive ends here for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And he's just starting to really get the recognition for it.
Yeah, it really is a bummer because I know he was in New England and had great years there, but he hasn't had since 2016, which was his first year with Arizona, he hasn't had less than 11 sacks in a season, nor has he had fewer than 18 quarterback hits, both of which would have far and away led the Seahawks and a few other teams last year. And 11 is quite a bit below the low bar. Like, he's also had 17 in 2017. Like, he has been amazing, but he's been with a team that has kind of bounced back and forth in the top 5 draft picks for the year. Like, they are not a good team, and it's kind of a shame. I think if he was even on like a playoff bubble kind of team, you'd see more of him, right? He'd be there in primetime games and people are watching him and people are looking to see, you know, what this young, surprising team can do. And so it's really been unfortunate. I think for that reason, I like low-key root for the Cardinals, not to beat the Seahawks. And I know that's blasphemous, but they're a likable team to me.
They are. They definitely are. Let's move on to Cam Newton here. He seems as determined as ever. The quote from him talking about being with the Patriots, he says, "It's just a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you." They were asking him about, like, you know, his routine and what he's doing. He says, "I wake up angry every day." Like, he's had a couple of good quotes in the last couple of days. Let me give you another one here real quick. He says, "I don't have to prove nothing because at the end of the day, especially not to nobody, I got to prove it to myself. That's a daily challenge, and I don't think nobody's expectations will ever surpass my expectations for myself. I mean, he sounds like he's definitely heard the criticism. I haven't really heard this type of thing from Cam Newton before. Like, his personality, his persona has been one of, like, I'm the cartoon superhero. I'm Superman. I go out there and I dance around and I present myself a certain way. Like, he cultivates that image. Now he just seems like a guy who's determined to go out there and he's to prove that he still is the player that he once was. I'm rooting for him personally. I've never been a Cam Newton fan because of all the stuff I just said. I don't like contrived image. I think that that's just lame. But if he's that determined to go out there, replace Tom Brady, and play at the level that he once did, good for him. What do you think, Stacey?
I'm actually curious to know who you guys legitimately want to win more. I know that you may not want to choose, but I'm making you choose. Do you want to see Tom Brady win more games with the Bucks, or do you want to see Cam Newton and Bill Belichick win more games with the Patriots?
Cam.
Jake.
All day.
You know.
You have to answer.
Tom Brady.
Wow.
I want it to be Tom Brady in this situation. I think Bill, at the end of this, has done the right thing as a coach and has been looking for options to move on. But also, I think sometimes players in these great systems often get looked at and say, well, they were only great because they played with, you know, under so-and-so, right? And I think that Bill Belichick also has that, you know, thing to prove. Well, he's only been great because he's had Tom Brady. So, to me, I'm always rooting for the player in that situation. But I am rooting for Cam Newton. I think that he's been through a lot. And it sounds like he's really looking to maximize this opportunity and get himself back into the conversation as, you know, a legit franchise quarterback in this league.
He was talking about how the two other quarterbacks there have been helping him out, Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham. He's got two nicknames, one for each of those guys. You want to guess what those nicknames are, Stacey?
I'm guessing that for Jared Stidham. Wait, for who and Jared Stidham?
Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham.
The nicknames? I don't know.
Yep.
I was guessing. I don't have nicknames, but I'm going to use the same ones. Me and Paul were joking about old-timey nicknames for, like, 1920s people. And we were talking about the Black Sox scandal, and the nicknames were, like, the brain and all that stuff. And I guess someone's nickname would be Tiny Shoes. So I'm going to say Jared Tiny Shoes Stidham. And yes, that's my final guess.
You know what? The nickname for Stidham could be one of those old timeies. He calls him Stiddy.
Okay.
Stiddy.
All right.
And he calls Brian Hoyer Hoister.
Hoister's pretty good.
Hoister.
Okay. Do you guys have a nickname you hate for yourself?
Not really.
I was hoping you'd have time to think of one.
I haven't had too many bad ones. I mean, you know,
they've all been
pretty.
Luke Wilson has one for you.
They haven't been bad.
Yeah. What about Heaps of Trash?
Heaps of Trash.
Heaps of Trash is an all in fun. That's just trash talk in general. That wasn't an actual nickname.
Okay.
That he called me every second of the day when he referred to me. Hey, Heaps of Trash. What do we got on the playbook? That wasn't like my actual nickname. It's just some good ping pong trash talk.
Got it.
Yeah.
Listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We sum it up next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Well, we've talked a bunch today, certainly about Quentin Dunbar and the fact that he's not going to be charged with anything because there's insufficient evidence to do so. Excuse me. But you know what? It's Friday. It's the final segment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's end this show on a positive note. We talked earlier about Everett Fitzhugh.
Yes.
Who has become the first black team broadcaster in NHL history because the Kraken have announced that he's going to be part of the on-air crew. Congrats to Everett. I think that is just a tremendous thing, in part because when you read the story, evidently when he was a kid, he went to a hockey game and he turned to his mother and he said at some point, I want to be a hockey announcer. Not a hockey player. He wanted to be a hockey announcer. And I think it's so wonderful that he got to achieve that dream. What percentage of people do you think actually achieve the dream that they set out to reach when they were kids?
Wow, we're getting real deep right now.
No, so I like we, this.
We
though.
Are. Just think about this. Okay. When I was a kid, I mean, you have dreams. They change. Like when you're a kid, you know, you're in fourth grade, you're into this. Fifth grade, you're into that. But I do remember saying at one point, I think I wanted to be like a sports broadcaster or something. I didn't think I'd be doing this, but I thought maybe, you know, I'd be doing play-by-play for the Red Sox or something. I don't know. So I guess I came kind of close in a roundabout way. But I don't think that many people get set out to do something when they're a kid and actually achieve that dream. I mean, Jake, you came pretty close. I'm sure you thought pretty early that you wanted to be a football player or some kind of athlete, and you saw that all the way through as far as you could.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's not many people that can say that they have been at the NFL level, that they've been able to see it at the highest level. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, that was a dream come true and a dream lived, to be able to don an NFL uniform and to be able to be in the building and competing and all of that. I mean, it was a tremendous opportunity, and to be a professional athlete. And that was something that I had aspirations to be at a very, very young age. That's all I wanted to do, was to play sports. And then as I got older, I actually started enjoying just kind of watching broadcasting, and thought that was something that I would love to get into, and had a communications degree. So it ended up coming about doing radio, you know, broadcasting. So it's a very unique situation, but I would say probably very few, either A, because that's not where their God-given talent was, you know, meant to be, or B, they just, you know, weren't able to see it through all the way, or, you know, the sacrifices that it takes to actually make it happen. I mean, it's...
life gets in the way sometimes.
It does. It really does. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Man, it's insane. It doesn't... I don't think the fact that a lot of people don't always get there takes away from, you know, the power of, you know, not to get sappy, but their own journey and their own accomplishments. Because it's really, really hard to do that. And sometimes our dreams just don't line up with reality, right? Like, I'm sure when I was younger, I wanted to be like a singer/waitress or something that was like, I had a ridiculous goal of like, well, I love pouring liquid out of the coffee holder, and also I like attention. So these things work out.
You wanted to be Taylor Swift.
I wanted
basically
to be an Egyptologist. Just ridiculous things. But no, I think that I think of this every like roster cut down, and I know that this year will be kind of different. But I always think like everyone that's being cut from these rosters, and people throw around the word bum or whatever it is, it's so disrespectful, because this is someone who is the very best from their town, the very best in their high school, one of the best in their college, and it still wasn't good enough to make an NFL roster. It is so, so, so hard to do something like that. It's just a tiny fraction of the people who start out that journey actually get to finish it there. And so I feel kind of upset when people take away from the accomplishments of people who even get to the practice squad or even get to a tryout. Like, you have to already get so far to even get to that point. I think, you know, looking at the broadcasting part with Everett, I think it's amazing to start your journey with this single kind of goal in mind, and then to actually get there takes a kind of willpower that I know I don't have, a lot of people I know don't have, and it's just... it's an astonishing level of dedication.
You bring up an interesting point about sports media maybe criticizing guys who get cut or whatever, because those guys who get cut come as close as humanly possible to getting a job as an NFL player as you can without actually getting one. And I guarantee you, most of the people who are criticizing probably wanted to be athletes themselves, rather than be in sports media. So who are they to be criticizing those guys who were better at that than they were? You know what I mean?
I think people also see all the little things that go into it. Like, you think that, like, oh, this guy got here, but he's just not as good. And you don't realize, like, well, this guy got here and he wakes up at 5 a.m. every single morning to work out. And then he has physical therapy at 5 p.m. and then he watches tape for the rest of the night. Like, there's all these things that happen behind the scenes with, like, with every football player that you don't even see.
Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible journey. It's filled with adversity, and you know, just talking about, you know, just dream jobs in general and all of that and what it entails. I mean, for me personally, you know, my dream, it was going on the right path, and then it didn't. You know, my college career, it was completely rocky. It was, you know, adversity left and right, and at one point it was, you know, extremely bleak that I would be able to even fulfill that dream. But being able to keep my head down and stay focused on that and continue to work through it, I think sometimes is the most difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. And being willing to take on that criticism, right? I mean, being willing to have people say, oh, you know, you can't do this, or you haven't succeeded, therefore you will not succeed. I mean, those are all really tough things to carry on and continue to not let it affect you. So I applaud anybody who, you know, puts their head down and really works hard towards their dream and eventually fulfilling that dream, no matter in what capacity that is. I mean, hats off to all you, to everybody out there who's working hard trying to make things happen.
Jake, for the record, you not making the NFL is the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow.
Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. I wish I was still there. I wish I was still playing, but this has been pretty good. This has been pretty good.
I like to think my path took me to not making the NFL so that we could also all end up together.
I'm also grateful for that, Stacey.
Thanks.
So we're grateful for that random kid who put the hex on you to make you 5'2". We are very grateful for that. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. It's been a pleasure. 710 ESPN Seattle.